Hello, everybody, and welcome to National Bugle Radio. This is July 13th, and I am here with the world-renowned former financial journalist, now omnibudsman at large for the entire world, Benjamin Fulford.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Benjamin, you're always into all sorts of things. An investigative journalist. And, you know, I want to ask you about what you're up to, but I also want to ask you about things that are going on in the world today. We've, since we last spoke, we've had the whole Brexit thing, and now there's all of this unrest in the United States. Do you have any inside information about any of this stuff that you'd like to share with our audience?
Yes, I do. Now, first of all, about the Brexit, is that there was a secret agreement with the Illuminati and the White Dragon Society several years ago, which basically they came to an agreement that Europe and Russia would kind of join in a single block, but that in that event, England would stay as a neutral, independent country, sort of like a Switzerland. And that's what's been happening. You know, that was a long-term agreement. But the other thing is, of course, Britain is the in many ways, the standard bearer of Western democracy, and the EU is not a democratic institution. I mean, I don't recall Donald Tusk or Jean-Claude Juncker being elected by the people of Europe in any sort of open manner. I don't think they even represent a truly functioning meritocracy either, because there's too much secrecy and people have to be, you know, members of a particular mafia. So it's not something where, like a Eurovision Song Contest, where anybody can just join, and if they're good, they'll get to the top, or like the U.S. military. So that whole thing is, the EU project is falling apart, but it's also not falling apart. What I mean by that is that there are some things the Europeans like about the EU, and they'll probably keep them. And what they like is the fact that they can work anywhere in Europe. Although the people from the poorer countries like it better than the people from the richer countries. For example, there are 3 million Polish people in England, you know, taking jobs at lower wages than British people would have expected, so they don't like it so much. That's part of the reason for the Brexit. On the other hand, there are 1.2 million Brits in Europe who like it because they can work in other countries. But in any case, I think that they'll probably come up with some way that people can keep working. The problem with the EU, and the other thing is, of course, free trade and going around without passports. You know, all that's quite welcome. The problem with the EU is the rampant bureaucracy in Brussels that is, you know, becoming a kind of Byzantine quagmire. The other problem, and this is the main reason for dissatisfaction, is the fact that the economy is in lousy state. And that really doesn't have anything to do with the EU per se. It has to do with bad economic policy. Structurally, apart from the northern countries, Europe has had a chronic trade deficit with the rest of the world for like 30 years. Same with the United States, by the way. We'll get to that later. So the economic problems are due to the fact that the EU is bankrupt. And we know now in hindsight that the reason the Soviet Union fell apart was because they were bankrupted. This was a strategy carried out by the Reagan administration where they did two things. One was to declare Star Wars and rapidly increase military spending, forcing the Soviet Union to follow suit, which they could not afford to do. The second thing they did was they lowered the oil price because they knew that the main Soviet source of foreign currency was oil. And that was enough to bankrupt the Soviet Union. And so an agreement was reached where Gorbachev basically was told, look, if you agree to the fall of the Soviet Union, then we will turn the EU into a new Soviet Union. And in fact, you know, these documents were leaked by senior Russian lawmakers just around the time of President Boris Yeltsin. There was a little window where all sorts of secret information was coming out. But and if you look at the structure of the EU, it's very, very similar to the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. So that whole project is falling apart, but it'll be replaced by something more free and more open and more in line with traditional European values. Okay. So that's my take on that.
Okay. And so you did mention 3 million Poles in Britain. If you look at the demographic statistics for a variety of European countries, you see Poles everywhere. Even in places like the Faroe Islands and in Greenland and Iceland and Svalbard up in the Arctic Ocean, I mean, the Poles have just gone everywhere. Also in England, there was a lot of Romanians, and I believe a lot of the Romanians aren't ethnic Romanian, they're gypsies. There seem to be the EU project has allowed for free gypsy movement. But you see the vote, the EU, the Brexit vote, as having been a vote where was the establishment pulling out all the stops to stop it, or was there some sort of secret acquiescence?
Well, if you look at the online polls and the average there, you'll find that it was actually 81% support for Brexit. And it was so big that they realized they couldn't steal the election without having a revolution, so they had no choice but to go along with it. But the influx of immigrants is definitely part of the problem. And that, again, it's known as the Caligari Plan. What we're seeing is social engineering, where they're trying to create a unite monotheism in a single one-world religion. So they've engineered this kind of fake clash between Islam and Christianity. And you'll find that these so-called Islamic groups like ISIS are not Islamic at all. They're funded by a run-out of Israel, basically. Mm-hmm. And then the P2 Freemason Lodge in Italy.
And you mentioned Caligari Plan. What could you describe what that is?
Yeah, it's Richard von Coudenhove Kalergi. He was an Austrian Japanese who lived at the beginning of the 20th century. And he was funded by Louis de Rothschild, Otto Habsburg, and Max Warburg.
And you're saying he's part Austrian, part Japanese?
Yes.
Okay.
And he had a plan to divide the world into sort of five countries. Uh-huh. One would be Europe, which would include African colonies. Mm-hmm. So Europe and Africa would be one. Mm-hmm. The other was supposed to be a union of North and South America. Mm-hmm. Then the British Commonwealth was supposed to be one. Mm-hmm. And Eurasia would be controlled by Russia, and then China and Japan would form a union. So five countries. And he also believed that there should be a one-world religion. And the people, his sponsors, of course, these are the European royalty who are the true powers behind the EU project. And there is still such a plan in the works. That's why, for example, they're letting all these Mexicans just cross the border into the U.S. because they want to, you know, and the president of Mexico is publicly calling for a union between Mexico, Canada, and the United States. So they're trying to create a North-South America single country. Mm-hmm. And then they've been forcing this fake clash between Islam and Christianity. And I say it's fake because, again, all these radical Islams or Muslims are not Muslims. They're not. I know the head of ISIS, okay, and he's a Eastern European atheist, okay, or maybe more likely a Lucifer worshiper, and he hates Islam, okay. Mm. So it's like for example, a Chinese person who hates the Japanese, pretending to be Japanese and trying to make the whole world hate Japan. Mm. That's what they're doing. They're pretending to be Muslims to try to make everybody hate Muslims, and true Muslims are very tolerant and easygoing people, and they've never had problems, with Christians in their countries until this radical stuff started being fomented by these people as part of their plan.
So now, like, the mass of the ISIS fighters, you're not saying that they're not Muslim, but that the leadership and
the leadership and the financing is not. I mean, look, the Israeli newspaper Haaretz has written that the ISIS fighters are being treated in Israeli hospitals.
Yeah, and you can see that also. I think the Daily Mail, the British paper Daily Mail, sent a film crew and has filmed the same things. And the Israeli military medics weren't even hiding it.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting is that the British came out with the Chilcot inquiry finally about the Iraq War, and you know, it's cautious, it's bureaucratic, but basically they say the war was illegal, which means that Tony Blair is a war criminal, as is George Bush Jr. And that whole group of neocons. But the other point is that they said the main driving interest was the oil companies. Now, it was about $2 trillion a year worth of oil coming out of the Middle East. You multiply daily production by the oil price and multiply it by 365 days a year, and you get about that number. So it was a big oil theft. But they cannot say, hey, you know, we're a bunch of oil companies, we're going to go murder people and steal oil. So what they do is they send a mercenary army of comic book bad guys and say, hey, we're going to go get the bad guys. And the oil is just a byproduct. So, you know, this whole BS corporate propaganda sham is falling apart because people are finding out about it. And the U.S. military in particular and the agencies are very angry that they were fooled into the Iraq War because they thought they were the good guys and that they were going after weapons of mass destruction. Mm-hmm. And they found out instead that they were unwitting participants in theft and mass murder. And then, of course, what they did was they take the most psychopathic members of the U.S. military and they scout them into these private armies, which keeps changing name. It was Blackwater and then XE and then Bridgewater Associates, whatever. They keep changing the name, but it's the same old characters, you know. Mercenary armies working mainly for oil and other resource companies. That's the real problem. And if you trace the ownership of all the Fortune 500 corporations, you'll find that the controlling share is always held by certain funds like Vanguard, State Street and Banking,
BlackRock.
Yeah, BlackRock, the usual crooks. And then you go to the, you know, and you come up with the same names, Rockefeller, Bush, Rothschild, Morgan, these people. And the understanding I have is that the European royalty, most of them, you call them the Rothschilds, but it's a sort of Rothschild, Saxe, Gotha family complex. They're all intermarried. They were actually against the plan to kill 90% of the world's population, which was being pushed by the neocons. And they were saying, well, we don't have to kill 90% of what they call the useless eaters to protect the environment. All we've got to do is, you know, tax carbon and then pay third world countries to protect their forests. So they had a much more reasonable plan than killing 90% of the world's population. And what's happening is that they made a deal with the Chinese. And that's why you have countries like England, Germany, France, Italy, Switzerland, etc., all joined the Chinese-led Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. So these groups all, you know, they've basically said they're cutting themselves off from the genocidal faction that seized power in the United States in the year 2000 coup d'etat. And you know, anybody who's still aware and has a few brain cells still in their head knows that the Bush regime was nothing more than a Nazi coup d'etat against democracy in the United States.
Okay. Now, before we leave the EU and go to American affairs, are there going to be other countries following Britain out of the EU?
Well, 71% of Greeks don't have a good favorable view of the EU, and the majority of the French don't either. And the French are in open revolt. 90%, there's a disapproval rating for President François Mitterrand is like 90%.
François
Hollande. I'm sorry, yeah. François Hollande. My apologies to the Mitterrand
family.
You're
back in the 1980s.
Yes. two very different people. So let's say Hollande.
The
okay.
Same Socialist Party. Same first name.
Yeah. So he's supposed to be a socialist, but then he's putting in all these draconian labor laws, and he's losing that. He's, you know, the French are rioting every day. There are people planning to arrest him and Nicolas Sarkozy, from what I hear.
Mm-hmm.
And the other problem is, again, the real underlying thing is the fact that they're bankrupt, and the financial system is imploding. And that is why you have, for example, Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi saying we need 150 billion euros to bail out the Italian banks, and the Germans saying, no way, Jose, or no way, Matteo, we're not going to pay for that. And then Renzi goes and says, well, you know, Deutsche Bank is way worse than Italian banks. They got all these derivatives. And what maybe he doesn't realize is that the Deutsche Bank has already been sold to the Chinese, which is why it's still around.
Uh-huh.
It hasn't been made public yet. But the point is that because they are going bankrupt, whenever a country or a regime goes bankrupt, there's regime change. This has happened all over the world. It just hasn't happened in the U.S. and Europe yet. It's just an unprecedented situation. As the NATO head said, you know, we've never been in a situation like this before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a pretty good bet that France and Italy will leave the euro. And
leave the euro?
The euro. They're not the EU, but the euro.
Mm-hmm.
Because they cannot... The choice is to issue their own currency and bail out their financial systems, or watch them go bankrupt and then have the owners of the financial, of the banks and the depositors lose their money, mm-hmm. which is what the Germans are saying. You know,
and how much, to what extent did that happen in Greece?
Well, the reason Greece hasn't been allowed to go under is because the people lending to Greece are the Germans. Mm-hmm. And if Greece goes under, then Germany goes under.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an emergency meeting between the heads of the EU and the Chinese government on July 12th, that's yesterday, to discuss this very issue. I don't know if you look at the official Chinese Xinhua news site, okay, you can see that they're having these strategic dialogues with members of the U.S. government 1 week, and then a week later they're having them again. They're supposed to only once a year. Now they're meeting with the EU people. There are big negotiations going on about how to deal with this bankruptcy issue. And the other thing, you know, a little secret thing is that UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is running around Asia trying to get his hands on money. He's saying he wants to become president of Korea.
Okay, and they do have elections coming up soon. I can't remember exactly.
United Nations is bankrupt, too, because they're owned by these people who own the United States of America Corporation and the EU Corporation, which are registered as corporations in Dun & Bradstreet. They have these numbers showing their corporate registries, and they're bankrupt. So when a company goes bankrupt, what usually happens is there's a change of management and a change in direction. And that's what's being negotiated. And, of course, the Europeans and the Americans are using this international tribunal in The Hague on this pieces of rock off the Philippines to try to, you know, use their one card, which is the incredible military power, saying, hey, you know, if you don't cut us a good deal, we'll use a pretext to start a war. But that's just, you know, table thumping. It's like shouting that takes place in negotiations, you know. But these are the high-level negotiations going on right now.
Okay. Now, so getting to the United States.
Yes.
It's been a very interesting year. There's a lot of stuff going on that a year ago, if you were looking towards 2016 and the 2016 election, it would just seem like we're likely to get another Tweedledee, Tweedledum choice between a Bush and a Clinton.
Or like they used to say in the Soviet Union times, the American people have a choice between Pepsi Cola and Coca Cola, you know, but
yes,
certainly
indeed.
Not wine or beer or coffee or anything like that. No. You know,
there's a lot of stuff that's going on, and then of course socially, we've got these this whole Black Lives Matter.
All right, this is important, and I want to get to that.
Let's get straight to it.
All right, let's be quite straightforward. Black Lives Matter is a racist organization.
Okay.
Okay. You can be racist against whites just as you can be racist against any other race.
Okay.
And they're racist.
Okay.
And they're a hate organization. And here's the point, is that they're financed by George Soros and by some other American millionaires. There's a couple of things that you need to point out. One is that the UN had a sort of Black Lives Matter meeting after this Dallas incident. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Ban Ki-moon is an employee of the Rockefellers. And then Mark Zuckerberg, who's the grandson of David Rockefeller, put a huge Black Lives Matter banner on the side of the building of Facebook headquarters right after this so-called Dallas shooting incident.
So if he's the grandson of the Rockefellers, that's not publicly known information.
Well, all right, but that's information I've been given to by my, you know, CIA-type, agency-type sources. And he's not some boy genius who made that company out of nothing, okay? They just took it over. And there was a lawsuit about that. It probably a bit of pay money and a few payoffs and a few killings to hush that up.
It wasn't innovation.
That there is a serious attempt to start race wars and race riots in the United States. Another thing that I think is very interesting is that, according to the website Zero Hedge, in June, the unemployment rate for young African-American males went from 28% to 41% in 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, somebody is giving orders to fire all young black men because they want to have a bunch of unhappy, you know, young men.
I don't know if there's an order being given to fire. Because one thing, if you're talking about June, is that's when people would be getting out of school and would be then...
Okay, but nonetheless, we have these professional troublemakers being bussed in and paid to riot. There's going to be a huge attempt to cause complete chaos at the Republican National Convention.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to bus in all sorts of crazies, and I'm hoping that what they're trying to do is force a declaration of martial law. And the other thing that they're trying to do is distract from the American people's attention. They're trying to incite a white-black race war to get people to not look at the what I call the Khazarian mafia, what you call the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I don't call them Jews is because the people at the top aren't Jewish. They don't actually worship Yahweh. They worship Lucifer, and they're not Jews. Okay, they pretend to be Christians. They pretend to be Muslims.
Call them
Muslims.
Jews as a tribal group, not as a religious group.
All right, well, I call them the Khazarian mafia. And the Bushes and the Clintons are members, so are the Rockefellers. And they may pretend to be Christian or whatever, but they're not, okay? So these people are fighting for their lives because, as George Bush Sr. once mistakenly told an American reporter, you know, if the American people find out what we've done to them, they're going to just drag us out of our houses and string us from the nearest lamppost. Something to that effect. And that's true, because if they do find out, and they are finding out, a critical mass of, I think, at least 10 million Americans is now aware of this stuff, you know. And that's enough, because these people tend to be intellectuals, and they tend to be in the military and the agencies, that I think we're close to a threshold point where we can, you know, break their control. But in any case, the situation is being decided outside of the United States to a certain extent. And like I say, the European side of the elite, they have sided with the Asians and the Russians now. So it's the people in charge, still in charge, clinging to the control of the media in the United States, to certain mega corporations and hired goons who are the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The whole world knows that. The United States is the rogue nation of the world, and it's run by a group of ethnic gangsters who have turned the United States into a giant sort of prison.
Yeah.
You have, more prisoners per capita than any other country on Earth, and also the highest prison population, period. So you have, you know, you're something like 20 times more likely to go to jail if you're an American than if you're a Chinese, you know.
Which, how about that?
And I have a friend who's in the financial business in Singapore who says he's seen bonds issued in Singapore that are backed by U.S. prison slave labor. Okay, this is a sort of, you have a regime that has, you know, and we're out to overthrow that regime. We want these people in jail, or we want them dead. We want them out of power. And if they're not going to go politely, we're going to have to go and hunt them down. There's no other choice. They've been trying to kill us and our families for years.
Now, we've been talking about Black Lives Matter, and you're from Canada. Did you see the news of Black Lives Matter shutting down the Toronto Gay Pride Parade? It's not a big deal, but yeah, they did. They shut down the Toronto Gay Pride Parade. And the irony is, of course, that Black Lives Matter is not the traditional black leadership from the churches or the old civil rights organizations, which, you know, themselves were kind of fronts. But it's come out and it's been very critical of the traditional black leadership for not having enough queers and women and disabled folks in it. And then here they go shut down the gay pride parade because it doesn't have enough black folks in it. And then of course they're also, you can talk what you want to talk about it, but they're expanding into Europe. They're having they're doing things in England and other European countries. And then I've seen from non-mainstream sources, and I'd like to know if you can verify this, that the Russian government has declared Black Lives Matter a terrorist organization.
I heard something to that effect, and it is a terrorist organization. It's a hate organization. It's not a legitimate representative of the African-American community. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the United States is in a situation where they're going to be able to incite race wars anymore. I think there's been enough dialogue and you know, starting with people watching everybody in America years ago, watching the Roots series about the slavery and then, you know, all this sort of stuff. And I think that the Americans have moved beyond that. And there's also been so many people who are now mixed, parentage that they're not going to succeed in starting all they're going to do is, they're going to succeed in hiring a lot of thugs to cause trouble. And hopefully there will be more police and military to deal with than there are thugs, and that these people can be rounded up and put in jail and stop from disturbing the peace. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was a statistic showing that the African Americans are not more likely to get shot by police than anybody else. Right. You know, so it's just, sure, there are cases where it happens when an individual police officer did something wrong, but it's not a systematic problem at this point.
Right. And more whites are killed by police than blacks, and blacks actually commit more, even though they're a smaller percentage of the population, they commit more violent crimes than whites. So there's no evidence. In fact, there was a young Harvard University's youngest tenured black professor did a study of this, and to his great surprise, he could not find racial bias in policing, especially regarding these people who die while in custody of the police.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, so that's why they're not going to be able, you need Tinder to start a fire, and it's just not enough actual, injustice for them to be able to pull this off. But again, they're trying to distract from themselves. They're trying to get people to fight each other instead of focusing on them. And they're scared for their lives. A lot of them have already fled to Paraguay, or to Patagonia, to southern Argentina. They bought like a 1,000-mile strip of coastline there.
Yeah, Adrian Salbucci's been talking a lot about that.
And, they're going back to their old Nazi haunts. You know, and I'm sorry, but for me, the Nazis and the Khazarian mafia are the same thing. I mean, I know that's sort of not the mainstream dialogue that we've been having over since the war, but
We have, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but there's a young man named Andrew Anglin who does the website, The Daily Stormer, and he's decided that everybody's going to call him a neo-Nazi anyway, so he's just declared himself a neo-Nazi to head them off, and he runs a neo-Nazi, he won't let them call him a neo-Nazi hate site, it's a neo-Nazi love site, he would reject that, he would say, no, only, like, real Nazis or such and such. But okay, that as it may be.
I mean, there are the thing people also need to understand is that, it's true that Hitler wrote in Mein Kampf that he wanted to enslaved the non-white races and killed them off. And it is true that since the Nazi coup d'etat put in the Bush regime, that the United States regime has been funding biological warfare and trying to start mass starvation. But, and that's all really horrific, and these people have to be hunted down and killed, every last one of them, as far as I'm concerned. But the Nazis were also very good scientists. And if you cut out the, cut out the genocidal part of it, and what you're left with is some people who are really concerned about ecology and who are really good scientists. And that part remains inside the U.S. military-industrial complex, and they're dissociating themselves from the crazy genocidal faction in their group. Mm-hmm. And they're, coming down on the side of what's right, and they're getting over their, distorted racial philosophy. So that's something that's happening inside the military-industrial complex, which is a good thing, because it means that all the best fighters in the world are now aligned in one direction, and that is against this gang who's been causing so much trouble around the world.
Mm. Okay, now, so we were talking about Europe, we were talking about America. Japan just had an election. It didn't decide a new prime minister, but they had their upper house election, and the prime minister's party won enough seats that it might be in a position to rewrite the constitution and force through more or less anything they want. Is there anything significant from this election or from what's going on in Japan that you'd like to tell our audience?
My understanding of the Japanese is that they're waiting for a deal to be reached at a higher level, and they're trying to keep low and go with that, with whatever side wins. Right now, the elections in Japan are totally rigged, okay? They're fake. They're not real. There's plenty of evidence for that put out by the Japan Independence Party. For example, they got all the old people at the Sokagakai religious cult, there's like 6-8 million of them, mm-hmm. to practice writing, voting. And they made them write like many, many copies each of polls, and they took these papers away. And the company that counts the votes is Musashi Engineering. It's owned by... it was Abe's father's company, and now it's owned by Peter Brigger from Fortress Asset Management.
Abe's father was Abe Shintaro, who was the foreign minister.
His
grandfather's Kishi, and his grandmother was from... It wasn't his grandmother from the heir of the Ishibashi, or what, the Bridgestone Tire Company?
I think that's... You're talking about Hatoyama.
Is that Hatoyama? Okay, I'm sorry.
But here's something, the mother's
from some sort of rich background.
Yeah, but let me tell you about Kishi, because that's...
Abe's grandfather.
He was the munitions, minister of munitions.
In World War II.
World War II. And what happened was, after World War II, they rounded up all these A-class war criminals, and they said, look, we'll let you go and put you back in power if you obey our orders. And the top guy said no. Boom. And they were hanged. Boom. Boom. And finally they came to Kishi, and he said, okay, right, I'll obey. And so since then they've had these Japanese prime ministers like Abe, who pretend to be prime ministers, but they Abe takes his orders from Michael Greenberg, who works for the head of Mossad in Japan, who works for the Rothschilds, and Kenneth Curtis, who's the head of CIA Japan, and Richard Armitage, who reports to the Bush-Clinton mafia. Right now, the real power, though, in Japan is the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Remember, here's the thing, the difference between a country that's lost a war and a country that's won a war. In a country that's lost a war, they disarm the population. So you cannot buy swords or guns in Japan. Nobody has them. In the United States and Canada, you do have them. Okay, that's because we won the war and we didn't let them take our weapons away. So what that means is that 30,000 U.S. soldiers is enough to control the population here. This is still an occupied country. It's not an independent country. And what the U.S. military is saying is that they want to become like a world peacekeeping force, and to negotiate a final deal to replace the architecture that was set up after World War II, the international architecture, they are playing their card, which is the military one. That's what they have to play. That's what they're playing. And so that's why they're trying to get India and Japan and Vietnam and Korea all to line up with the U.S. military, saying, hey, we're going to stop the Chinese bullies. It's just a bargaining tactic, okay? At the end of the day, a deal is going to be reached.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and that's the sort of situation we're facing now.
Okay. Now, Japan, if you come to Japan and you do business at the, the local government office or in banks or stores, or you'll find that the Japanese people that you deal with are the most honest people you're going to find. That there's no bribery, no corruption at the personal level that the individual is dealing with. But when you're talking about the top levels, it's not necessarily the same.
It's 100% corrupt.
Okay, it's 100% corrupt. And a couple of years ago, you were telling me a very interesting story that, as an investigative journalist, you wound up getting involved in, that had to do with the so-called, the alleged suicide of a lawyer who had been appointed to run a bankrupt bank.
Okay, well, it was this Mr. Honma, who was a senior guy at the Bank of Japan,
mm-hmm.
who was put in charge of a Aozora bank, and within a week...
Aozora bank, which was the recreation of a failed bank. It was one of the long-term credit
banks.
Well,
what happened was that all the North Korean credit unions in mm-hmm. Japan had all their funds looted.
And the North Korean, there are a lot of North Korean credit unions because a lot of the Koreans in Japan who stayed here after the war wound up with North Korean citizenship, and they run their own credit unions.
Well, here's the thing. I heard this directly from, a very senior member of the Yakuza, the Japanese underworld, that they held a gun to him, made him write his will. Then they put him, injected with a sleeping
This is Mr. Honma.
Mr. Honma, with a sleeping medicine. Then they hung him.
And this was in a
hotel. And the thing was that the lady called, I think, same name as my ex-girlfriend, but...
Which one?
Kumiko. Anyway, Mori. Okay, anyway, and she's the voice for Pikachu, the Pokemon.
So Pikachu's
and she's in the room next door, and she
Pikachu's
wrote in her blog.
In the room next door to the...
The Pikachu voice.
The
lady.
Banker who's being murdered.
And she wrote in her blog that there was screaming and moaning all night coming from the room, and that she couldn't sleep.
Uh-huh.
And I called the hotel, and they said that where they found the body, there was no... He couldn't hang himself. There's nothing to hang himself from.
This was about 2004?
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, what happened is, because I got to know, I was a financial journalist, and when the Japanese financial crisis started, when the bubble burst, I found out that all the bad loans were under the control of gangsters. Mm-hmm. So I started to cultivate gangster sources to find out what's going on, and they told me they were middlemen, and that they worked for this, Jewish or Khazarian gangsters. Mm-hmm. And they were, responsible for killing Japanese politicians and industrialists who didn't go along with it. And that was how I ended up following the trail all the way to David Rockefeller.
Mm-hmm.
And it scared the shit out of him because he thought he was way above the clouds and nobody would get to him. But I pinned specific murders on that man, and I've mm-hmm. said it. And that's how I got into all this stuff about the secret government and all this other things going on. But that one murder case was just one of dozens linked to the banks.
So there are murder cases, and there also have been a lot of pedophile cases. Or not pedophile.
What they use now to control political dissidents is they, put kiddie porn in their computers and arrest them for child pornography. So I would say that 90% of the people arrested for child pornography are probably arrested for some other reason, targeted for another reason.
And in Japan, groping women on the train, accusations of that, right?
There was a Mr. Wexa who, he was a former finance minister guy, had three TV shows,
mm-hmm.
and he was very prominent when Prime Minister Koizumi and finance economy minister Takenaka were looting the Japanese economy, and he was saying these guys are you know destroying the Japanese economy, which they did. And what happened was, he was arrested for looking at a girl's underwear with a mirror, mm-hmm. right? And but there was no complaint actually filed by the so-called victim. Mm-hmm. And then later he was taken to a party where he was drugged, and then he was put on a train where a policewoman happened to be and claimed that she was groping him, and you know they were just trumped up charges because they were. And then after that, suddenly he lost his TV shows, he lost his job as a professor at Waseda University, and he was silenced because they were trying to shut down any voices that were criticizing the takeover of the Japanese listed companies. Because what happened was they blackmailed Japan with earthquake weapons, according to Takenaka, in order to that they hand over control of all the listed Japanese companies. Now, when we were studying the Japanese economy and as I was reporting it for many years, they were, had this thing called mutual shareholding, where the banks and the companies owned each other's shares so that...
Yeah, cross-shareholding.
Cross-shareholding, so that foreigners and outsiders couldn't come in. What happened was that under Koizumi and Takenaka, all the banks were forced to sell off their shares in industrial corporations, and these were taken over by hedge funds, such as, you know, the usual Vanguard, BlackRock, and controlled by Rockefeller and Rothschild. So they took over ownership of all the Japanese listed companies, and they used earthquake weapon blackmail. And the other thing they did was, Prime Minister Koizumi strangled and murdered three women. And when he was prime minister, he visited the United States, and they gave him a beautiful blonde prostitute, and then they drugged him. And we woke up, she was dead, strangled in his bed. And they said, we're going to get you for strangling this woman and murder if you don't, hand over the Japanese economy. This is the sort of people we're dealing with. This is the sort of thing they do. And that's the Bushes, my folks. I've said this publicly before, and I'll say it again, because I have my sources.
Okay. This is just an aside, but when Koizumi was a young student, he went over to London, I think at the London School of Economics, and he lived with Sid Barrett, who was the LSD-crazed frontman for Pink Floyd, who eventually became crazy and they had to replace him. But he lived at Sid Barrett's house, his mom's house. Now, I was recently talking with a mutual friend of ours who's the head of the Japanese operations of a major U.S. corporation in Tokyo, and he was saying that he has been finding just increasing government pressure on the media that's really shut down a lot of media freedom. He was saying, blaming it on Abe, but I think you could probably trace it back to Koizumi and Takenaka, and of course Abe's really kind of a protege of Koizumi in many ways, using various means for silencing or cutting
this down. Been happening for a long time now. A lot of my Japanese journalist colleagues have been murdered over the years, and a lot of them were bribed or lawsuited or threatened or otherwise forced into silence. It's been going on for a while. But it is a little bit more obvious these days.
Obviously, one of the examples he used, he said that where NHK, the national broadcaster, used to have a morning news show, it's been replaced by a morning drama show. There's less news out there. You're just not getting the type of information that you used to be able to get. And NHK is a national broadcaster that always had a lot of government influence, but even some of the private broadcasters like Asahi have started towing the line a lot more than they used to.
That's right. I mean, it's Japan is also now under a fascist regime. I mean, the Abe regime is a military government, okay? There's no other way.
With the military being the American military.
Yeah, but the Japanese military are on board, and they're kind of uniting their militaries. But it was a military government installed through a rigged election, And people who know this know this, and the facts are there, the evidence is there, you know. But again, the bigger picture is that the United States and the European and the UN corporations are all bankrupt, and there's negotiations on how to restructure all the global infrastructure, the IMF, the World Bank, the United Nations, all that's going to be redone and revamped. And that's why you're seeing all these photographs on the official Chinese government news site of large American and European delegations coming to China, and then, you know, the Russians going there. Now, here's something, too, that's really kind of, if people want to understand that it's not the same, that we're going through a sort of fall of the Soviet Union type of situation, I think the Middle East is a good place to look. Russian news sites reported that Israel, Syria, and Egypt have applied to join the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Mm-hmm. That's a military alliance and an economic alliance. Now, Iran is also trying to join. Mm-hmm. Okay? And India and Pakistan. So here you have Israel, okay, trying to join a military alliance that Iran's also trying to join. Mm-hmm. And now for 30 years, you know, we've been told that within a few months, Iran was going to get a nuclear bomb. Mm-hmm. Now here's I've actually got some good inside information on this, which is that the whole Iran nuclear bomb campaign was run by Glencore Commodities, which is run by a guy called Mark Rich, supposedly.
Mark Rich. Well, Mark Rich is the infamous Jewish wheeler dealer who Bill Clinton gave, who was in exile in Switzerland because he was in exile from the law.
But here's
Bill Clinton gave him a pardon on the last day of his presidency.
Yes, that's the one.
Okay, that Mark Rich.
And what happened, what they were doing was, Israel would say, we're going to attack Iran before they get a nuke. And the oil price would go up. Mm-hmm. Right? And then they'd say, oh, maybe we won't attack after all. And the Iranians say, oh, you know, we're not making nukes. Don't worry. Everything's okay. And then the oil price would drop. And they would keep buying and selling oil based on this Iran nuke story. And they were paying off both Iranian and Israeli government officials. And here's the point, is that the Glencore headquarters is in Zug, Switzerland. And it's located in the family complex owned by, I think it's Baron David de Rothschild, the head of the Swiss branch of the Rothschild family. So both Iran and Israel were working for the same people, and they were doing this to manipulate oil prices. So now what's happening is that they're kind of changing their whole strategy, and then they're joining the same alliance. And the other big one, and this is something that is still ongoing, is that, remember in November, Turkey shot down
the Russian fighter jet.
Well, last week, Turkish media were reporting that the Turks had invited Russian military forces into the Insulkirk air base, mm-hmm. and that they wanted to ally themselves with Russia. And there are, you know, you can see in the official TASS news site that there are, you know, meetings going on between Russian and Turkish ministers, and suddenly the pipeline's coming back in. And so what you're seeing is a big deal has been reached behind the scenes with Russia, and between Russia and the Rothschilds, and so all their sort of flunkies in the Middle East are kind of falling in line. And the other thing I heard, this is from a 30-some-year veteran of Mossad, was that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been caught laundering billions of dollars, and that he is preparing to flee to Patagonia, mm-hmm. and that either a lookalike or will take the rap for him, or else
a smell of
he will fake his death by heart attack or stroke to escape the charges. But he's kind of bailing out. That's what I'm hearing. Wow. So a lot of stuff is going on. And the big one, the big kahuna, of course, is the United States. And, you know, that battle is still raging. But I think the Bush-Clinton-Rockefeller mafia is losing. And they're, you know, on the way out. And I say good riddance, because they were trying to kill 90% of the world's population. Well, they're saying, okay, we're getting rid of useless eaters in order to save the environment. That's BS. They're just mass murdering mentally sick criminals who belong either dead or in an insane asylum or a prison, but not in power. Mm-hmm. And certainly not in charge of the U.S. dollar.
Okay. Well, we are coming up towards the end of what's been a very interesting interview. Is there anything left that you'd like to say to our listeners?
When the fall of the Soviet Union was happening, it took place over several years. So during the time, you know, there's one thing after another. First, there was a Polish dockyard strike, and then the Polish government fell, you know, and then step by step, and then Ceausescu was shot in Romania, and the Berlin Wall fell, and you know, and it took place over several years. And we're in the middle of the same process, but this time it's the EU and the US that are undergoing it. Mm-hmm. And if we handle this right, it'll be a very good thing. But if we handle it badly, there will be hardship and chaos, just like there was in Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union. So we need to do this transition in a smart way, without chaos, without mass deaths and instability, and I think we're going to be able to pull it off. But there's going to be a lot of trouble in the U.S. over the summer and fall, for sure, and in Europe, too, before the new structures are in place. But we are living in historic times, and, you know, the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. Well, we're living in interesting times, folks. I'm an eternal optimist, and I think at the end of the day, this is going to be very, very good for the planet Earth and all its living inhabitants, including both people and animals and plants.
Okay.
And microbes, too.
And microbes, don't forget the microbes. Okay, well, thank you very much. That's a good, inspiring note to leave off on. Thank you very much for joining the show, and I hope you'll let me talk to you again sometime soon.
Sure. Always so welcome to talk to you.
Okay, thank you. Train them is my cause. I will travel across the night.